Today is the last day of summer, but that doesn't have to mean the end of garden fresh produce. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. Linda Nave of Iowa State University Extension Agronomy and Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture, will be here. We're going to talk about extending the season. We'll find out how commercial growers do it and how you can do it at home, even if it is a little bit labor-intensive. Richard and Linda will also answer your questions about the plants in your life. 866-780-9100. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and this is officially the last day of summer. The days are growing shorter, the nights are growing cooler, and today it really does feel like it's over. But we're going to talk about how we can keep the season going in our gardens today. Richard Giron of Iowa State University Extension Horticulture will join us in a few minutes. We're going to start the hour with Linda Nave of Iowa State University Extension Agronomy. Hello, Linda.
Hello. How are you? I don't think the agronomy department will claim me, but I'm with Extension Value Added Ag, formerly with horticulture. So I'm a horticulture specialist in value added ag, and people are calling, aren't they, Richard, about what kind of things they should be doing to protect their plants, if they should protect their plants. If it's early for our average frost date. We're about a week early, wouldn't you say, Richard? If it freezes in your area, particularly here in central Iowa, our average first frost of the fall is around October 3rd, October 5th. And so this is about a week early if we get a freeze here. In northern part of the state, you're getting real close to your average. So if it comes, it's no surprise.
But it is starting to really feel like it is coming. But, of course, in my garden, there are still tomatoes. In your garden, Linda, there are probably still tomatoes.
There are still tomatoes, and they're coming on, and they're doing really well. Grape tomatoes, standard tomatoes. The Romas are pretty much over, but overall, yeah, we still have tomatoes. We still have peppers, and peppers are extremely sensitive to the cold temperature. So if it gets anywhere near 33, 32, they're going to show some damage.
Well, let's start with commercial growers, because with the increased demand for locally grown produce, of course, commercial growers in Iowa are faced with a lot of challenges because our growing season is a beautiful one, but it is not that long. So let's talk about some of the high tunnel technology that commercial growers can use.
Yes, the high tunnels that you were referring to are simple greenhouse-like structures. You'll see them out on the landscape, in the rural landscape. They are very simple. They're sort of a temporary structure in which they don't have a foundation like a greenhouse. The crops are grown directly in the soil. They're not grown on benches or in pots typically. They're grown right in the field soil. So you might imagine it just a little covering over the field. The size varies. They're 30 by 96 is a common large size. Some growers are putting up 30 by 72 foot high tunnels, which does offer a lot of space for crops. Can grow just about anything in a high tunnel, but commercial growers have narrowed that down to specific crops because some are more profitable than others. Profitable at the market, profitable for wholesale.
How expensive is it to put up a high tunnel?
It varies. It depends on the type of high tunnel you're putting up. There are different kinds. They're in styles. There's the Gothic style, which is higher sides, and then it peaks up higher. Then there's the Quonset size style, that's just the half circle, and those are very common. They tend to be a little less expensive. They don't have the capacity for the weight of snow as well as do the Gothic style, but the Gothic are more expensive, but they're strong structures too. So we have different styles, so the cost varies, and it varies according to the size, but I would say a 30 by 96 foot high tunnel could cost anywhere between $8,000 and $12,000, depending on the amount of technology you put into it, such as automated roll-up sides. The ends are all separate, so it will vary considerably, but it's still much cheaper than a greenhouse of that size.
Right, but it sounds like you can get pretty fancy if you want to.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
How many seasons do you think an average commercial grower would have to go to pay for that kind of investment?
Depends on what they plant and how intensive they plant. And if they keep it in production from, let's say, April through October, they can have it paid for in one season.
What kinds of plants do well in high tunnels?
The plants, like I say, anything can grow well in a high tunnel. It's a desert-like environment, so we don't have the rainfall coming onto the plants causing a lot of foliage diseases. We can moderate the temperature somewhat to use that as our benefit. And we moderate and we can regulate the water because we have to irrigate everything. So we can have just the right amount of water and fertilizer on our plants. And so we don't have quite the environmental factors, negative factors, playing an impact on our crops. So most anything will grow in a high tunnel. The growers find the most profitable things are tomatoes. Bell peppers can be grown profitably in a high tunnel. High-value cucumbers, greens, lettuce, clear up until like almost Christmas. Some growers are keeping them year-round in the high tunnel, or not year-round, but winter-long, but they really don't grow in the winter. They don't die, but they just sort of sit there due to the lower light intensities and cool temperatures. What other things they're growing? Raspberries and strawberries in a high tunnel. High-value raspberries, the great big delicious plump raspberries, do very well in the high tunnel and will produce particularly the fall-bearing varieties such as Autumn Britain, Autumn Bliss, clear up until almost Thanksgiving.
Wow.
If you protect them from an early freeze like this.
During the summer months, during the growing season, what happens to the plants that are planted in a high tunnel?
The growers will shift their attention to the plants and the crops that have tolerance to the heat, somewhat tolerant, and that would be peppers and tomatoes and cucumbers. The lettuce is gone by that time because it just is too warm to produce a good crop, and you can't get the leaf lettuce to germinate well in the warm soils middle of the summer.
Do the plants that, like if you plant tomatoes in there, is there a problem with plants getting too hot during the summer months?
The plants will grow and they'll do fine, but it's the fruit quality that deteriorates as a result of the high temperatures. We get more of a potassium deficiency showing up on the top, which is this yellowish orange color, and going into the core is more white. So the high temperatures will affect the fruit quality, and it will also affect the fruit quantity because the blossoms will drop in the high temperatures. So these are some of the things that we run into. The plants will survive, and then we get infestations of insects during the high temperatures and summer months, such as aphids and whiteflies that the growers have to deal with, that the growers that just grow outside don't have so much of a problem with.
Well, and I suppose you also have to do all the watering, all the irrigation. So mm-hmm. There's a lot of labor-intensive work within the high tunnel as well.
There is. There's more management, and there's actually more strategies that have to be used when doing high tunnel production, because we have to regulate the irrigation in order to get a good crop. It's good to have a good constant amount of water, not too much and not too little on your crops, and you're going to have a good production as a result of that. And fertilizer and crop rotation can be an issue as well. So we have to be able to understand what our fertility needs is and how often we can grow a crop in a particular area before it needs to be rotated out. And most people say, well, I'd like to grow tomatoes all the time, but that just can't happen because there's certain strategies.
Who wouldn't want to grow tomatoes all the time, right?
So there's certain strategies that a grower has to learn about to grow successfully in a high tunnel. And there's the temperature moderation you have to do because it's passively solar to heat and ventilate. And so you roll up the sides, the long sides roll up manually, or you can invest in a thermostat that automatically rolls it up at a certain temperature. And the ends roll up during the summer months. But then when it starts getting cold like this, the grower has to go out and roll everything down, batten it down, so to speak, to keep that cold temperatures to a minimum in the high tunnel. And then as soon as the sun comes out, it's going to warm up very, very quickly in that high tunnel. So they have to be out there and roll them back up. So early in the spring and this time of year in the fall, there's a lot of shifting to keep that temperature and the climate in the high tunnel at the optimum level. And it's interesting that the temperature in a high tunnel will not be that much different than the temperature outside. So if a grower really wants to protect their crops, they almost have to go in with a layer of Agribon, Remay, a floating row cover, to give that extra protection or add a little extra heat to it with a propane tank or two. And that does a pretty good job of keeping that temperature a little bit higher. The air temperature may be the same under a cover like that, but the plant temperature, which is really the critical thing under a cover like this, is a little higher. So we will not get the freezing quite as quickly as we would an uncovered plant outdoors, even though the air temperature might be the same.
So let's talk about the home garden. Right now, with my beautiful tomato plants, what can I do to keep that going?
Well, you could cover them, but it's going to be difficult to cover a tall plant that's growing 4 feet tall in a tomato cage. But if you have a potted plant, you could move it indoors or put a covering over it. Some things you just do better off just letting them slide by.
If you cover something outside, how much of a cover? I mean, would taking a sheet out work? Does it need to be any special thickness?
Actually, you don't want to put on something that's going to weight down the plant and break the stems. A sheet would do fine, because what you're going to do is you may have similar temperature inside and outside, but the leaf temperature they found, Elwin Taylor gave me this information, our climatologist, he said the leaf temperature is what's really important, and we can get leaf temperature differences from outside to under a cover at about 6 degrees to 8 degrees difference. And so a cover does help the leaf temperature.
So, and it keeps the frost from actually,
yes, it does,
sitting on the plants.
Yes, it does. So he showed me some research on this, and it's very interesting to see that differential there. So cover does help to some degree. He does recommend, though, if it's going to be a cloudy, windy night, covers really don't help. They help the most on still, calm, clear nights.
So this is something that you could do if you have really intermittent frost and the temperatures are going to be okay after one specific cold night.
That's right.
Might be worth your time for that, but this is not something you're going to want to do every day.
No, not extended time. And you don't want to leave those covers up. Let's say we're going to have two freezing temperature nights in a row. That gets down to 30, 32. So you say, well, I'm not going to go back out and recover it. I'll just leave it. That's not good for the plant. They do need the sunlight, and they need, I would uncover them too. Plus, the heat buildup underneath that cover might get a little high.
Are you seeing home gardeners installing mini high tunnels?
I can't say that I've seen many, but they do offer small-scale high tunnels on the market that people might put up in their backyard, but you don't see that very often.
Well, maybe we'll see more of it in the next few years. Mm-hmm. Linda Nave, thank you very much, mm-hmm. and we're going to continue our conversation in just a moment. Richard Giron will join us. Linda Nave, Iowa State University Extension Value-Added Agriculture. Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture. They'll both be here, and they're ready to answer your questions. The number to call is 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and with me, Linda Nave of Iowa State University Extension Value-Added Agriculture. Richard Giron is here now, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture. Hello, Richard.
Good morning.
Thank you for being here. And you're welcome to join our conversation as well. The number to call is 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org or leave your question on our Facebook page, Iowa Public Radio. First up is Jesse on the line from Dubuque. Hello, Jesse.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
I have a question about transplanting hydrangeas and other perennials. I was planning on doing that this weekend, but now with the forecast of possible frost, I guess I'm wondering if that is a good idea to transplant. And I guess I'm not transplanting the hydrangeas. I'm just planting them from a pot.
Okay.
So will frost, is that a bad idea with the frost?
No, that's not a problem at all as far as a hydrangea. Go ahead and plant that as soon as you can. As far as moving some of the perennials, some perennials move better in the spring of the year. For example, asters, mums, sedum, they transplant much better in early spring just as new growth is appearing. as far as maybe this year, as far as you could possibly move things like garden phlox, daylilies, some of those plants, peonies. And if you do that, try to get that done in the next week or 10 days.
Okay. Okay. Well, tomorrow is my goal.
Okay. And so anything that you move, let's say you move some daylilies or garden phlox, go ahead and do that. Water them in nicely. And then if the weather stays dry this fall, water those plants periodically until the ground freezes. That way they have a chance to get reestablished before winter.
Okay. Great. I will continue with my plan.
All right. Well, thanks a lot for your call, Jesse. I hope you have a very productive day tomorrow. Corrine is on the line next from Radcliffe. Hello, Corrine.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
I want to say how much I appreciate your program. I listen nearly every week, and I really appreciate your help. I have a seedling pecan tree that must be moved. Can I do it this fall, or should I wait till spring?
Well, I would definitely wait and do it next spring.
Okay.
You can, you basically want to do it when the tree is dormant or bare. It has no foliage. So theory, you could do it maybe in November, but I would much prefer spring. Because when you dig up a plant and transplant it, it does suffer some damage. And if you do it in November, and then we have a hard, really brutal winter, it may not survive the winter very well. So I would do that early in the spring before bud break.
Okay.
And dig up a nice ball of dirt around the plant.
All righty. Thank you. And the other question is about the bare patches in my lawn. It has really suffered from the drought. I don't think it's coming back.
It may not.
Can I seed this fall, spread the seed, and hope the snow will take it down in the ground and help it sprout next spring?
Well, if you can do it this weekend, and if the spots are not too big, I would just go out with a rake and kind of rake these areas. And the objective is to break the soil surface and then sow your grass seed and then lightly rake the seed into the soil. And if you can do that this weekend, I think there's a pretty good chance that grass will come up, and by November you'll have a nice stand of grass. Now, you have to keep the seed bed moist, so you have to water frequently. So once you have the seed bed the seed down, plan to water probably once a day.
All right. Corrine, thank you so much for your call. And you can join our conversation at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And this is an email from Kathy. She says, is fall a good time to plant grasses and perennial flowers? I have a small native wildflower garden that I'd like to add to. Can I plant some things now, or should I wait until spring?
Well, if you actually have plants, like in a container, I would go ahead and plant those yet in the next few weeks, and they should be fine. Just make sure they're well-watered this fall, and most likely they should be fine. If you want to make sure, let's say you go out to the garden center and they have a number of perennials on sale, go ahead and plant those, water them nicely, and maybe in November, maybe around Thanksgiving, if you have some pine needles or maybe some straw, you can cover them with those materials, and that provides protection for them during the winter months.
And some prairie plant seed companies will sell seed, and you can sow it in the fall, but they won't germinate until spring. But it's right there ready to go. It's kind of like your own, the natural situation where the plant sheds its seed in the fall, it goes into the soil, and then it germinates the following spring. So you could, if you're seeding, get it in the ground to as soon as possible.
Is that the recommended way to plant prairie grasses, or does it matter really?
Well, there are different times when you can do it. You can do it actually in late spring. You can do it in the fall. The main thing is trying to get good seed soil contact so it does germinate.
All right. Here's an email from Sherry in Walford. She says, there are many perfectly round nickel-sized holes in my lawn, especially in the areas where the grass is sparse because of the hot, dry summer. There's no soil mounded around the holes. It looks like someone pushed in a pole into the ground and then pulled it out. Any ideas?
I'm assuming there are some very fat birds in the neighborhood. They've been eating the white grubs in the soil, And for them, right now is the time when they would be doing that. White grubs are very common in late summer. And if you're seeing fairly round holes that are very regular in size, probably birds.
Okay. Let's go back to the phones. And next on the line is Peter in Iowa City. Hello, Peter.
Hello. The apple ripening season a little earlier in Iowa this year?
Apple season?
Well,
there is no apple season in Iowa.
It's a sad year for apples.
It is, but
it kind of depends upon the area. Mm-hmm. Some areas, they may have lost like 90% of their crop. There were a few areas mm-hmm. where they maybe had much better luck than that. But for the most part, I think it's about right on time. Mm-hmm. So what they do have, I would look for in the next few weeks.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Peter.
Thank you.
And next up, we've got Brian on the line in Davenport. Hello, Brian.
Hello, everybody. How you guys doing?
Good. What's your question?
All right. I've got a hill in the back of my yard that probably drops 15 feet in 15 feet. And it's kind of a pain to mow, so I was hoping to plant something back there that would I wouldn't have to mow every week.
Well, I guess one possibility would be the native grasses. Mm-hmm. Most native grasses have very deep roots. They go down maybe 3, 4, or 5 feet deep. They can. They don't require a great deal of maintenance, so you wouldn't have to mow. Now, there is labor involved in establishing that. Typically, you have to prepare the seed bed. You may have to somehow cut the area with some type of device to control the weeds for a year or two. But that would be a possibility mm-hmm. where you have your native grasses like big blue stem, little blue stem, Indian grass, switchgrass. You could put in some, also include some native wildflowers so you have some color. So it can be a very attractive thing, just like what you see on the roadside mm-hmm. ditches.
Now, would that creep up into the yard?
Not really. No, it mm-hmm. really doesn't. Those plants are not very aggressive, so they're going to kind of stay where they are.
Okay, great.
All right, thanks.
Thank
yeah, good luck with that. Thanks a lot for your call. And next up, we're going to go to Kim in Rock Island. Hi, Kim.
And a happy Friday to everybody. lovely weather today. But blueberries was my call. Is it, is it best to wait till spring to plant anymore, or can I plant more now?
I would wait till spring. Again, find dormant plants either through mail order or local source and plant in next spring. Early next spring would be the best. Okay. Blueberries have a very fibrous root system and need to get really established. And you need to put, while they're establishing, they need a good supply of water. So I would wait till next spring.
Okay, well, and that's where I got fortunate this year. I planted three in the spring, and they've done great.
Good.
You know, as far as the plants are still alive and thriving. So, mm-hmm. And that's where it's like, darn, maybe I should have planted more. So I thought, well, I'll call and find out if I can do some more. So,
good.
All right. Well, thank you, guys. You have a fun weekend.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Kim. Next, let's go to Lance on the line in Iowa City. Hi, Lance.
Hi.
What's your question?
I have a question about laying some sod this weekend in my yard. I planted grass seed earlier in the year, and I believe it was just killed by that early frost. It was literally about a day or two before a late frost, excuse me. And so the grass never really came up. I sprayed Roundup on the area about 2 weeks ago, and I think I'm ready to plant lay down the sod now, but I'm worried about another freeze and wondering if I should wait till the spring or just go ahead and lay that sod down. I thought maybe you'd have some tips you could give me for success on that.
Actually, late summer, early fall is ideal to lay sod. Ideal. Frost or freeze is not going to damage the grass at all as far as the sod is concerned. So if you have a nice, clean seed bed, as far as you've destroyed the weeds, there's no problem there. What I might want to do possibly is apply a starter fertilizer before mm-hmm. you lay the sod down and kind of rake that in a little bit into the soil.
Beforehand,
Beforehand, mm-hmm. and then lay your sod. And then after that, the most important thing is to water it. The nice thing is the weather conditions in late summer, early fall are ideal. Typically warm days, but not hot days, cool nights. And so for the first week or so, go ahead and water the sod once a day. And basically what you're doing is keeping the sod moist and the upper 1 inch of soil below that moist. Okay, so you don't have to put on a large quantity of water. Just keep the sod and the upper 1 inch of soil moist. And then after a week of doing that, then you start to water less frequently. So you might, after the seventh day, skip a day and then water, and then maybe skip 2 days and then water. But now we're starting to water more deeply as we water less frequently. And after about, let's say, 3 or 4 weeks, I would think once a week probably should be fine. And keep on doing that until the ground freezes in late November or December.
Okay.
And you're all set. And do mow it as the grass grows. Do mow it. And the grass should be well established by, I would think, Thanksgiving.
All right. Now, what about the area? What's the best way to prepare that area? Right now, it has basically no grass grew from the seeds that I planted, but there's little weeds, and I've been mowing them. They're all dead now, of course, because of the Roundup. So I guess what I was going to do is just kind of dig up the soil, turn it over so that's just the earth is exposed. What's the best way to do that?
I think I would just go out with a garden rake, a metal garden rake, and go out there and really rake it hard. You don't have to go that deep, and you can remove any debris. And then once you've raked it, then I would apply my starter fertilizer, and then I would rake it in, make it all nice and level, and then lay your sod. You're all set.
All right. Thanks a lot.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call. If you'd like to join our conversation, give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. It's Horticulture Day today on Talk of Iowa. And next up, Robert is on the line in Mason City. Hi, Robert.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
Well, I've got a tomato plant that last spring sprouted on its own from an area that used to have tomatoes. Mm-hmm. I didn't plant it there. It grew into a giant tomato plant, probably the biggest one I've ever seen, and it produced a grand total of 3 small tomatoes.
Oh.
So I'm wondering what happened there.
Well, most tomatoes are hybrids, and when you have seeds that volunteer from those hybrids, they're no longer hybrids. And oftentimes, the plants that develop from those seeds oftentimes are not very desirable, and you had one that obviously was not. So that happens typically when you have volunteers from hybrids. Oftentimes those volunteers are not very good quality. They're not very productive, that type of thing.
Yeah, the little tomatoes weren't too bad tasting, but that's all we got from the whole plant.
Yeah. And sometimes the weather affects it too. Like this past summer with the extreme heat, they just weren't that productive. So that was probably a factor too.
Okay. Well, that answers that mystery.
All right, Robert, thanks a lot for your call.
Yeah, thanks.
Let's try to get one more call in here before the break. Stanley is on the line from Fayette. Hello, Stanley.
I'm just wondering about, is there any advantage to using potash in the garden?
Potash in the garden.
Well, you could do a soil test. I would say that most garden soils, if they're good, typical Iowa soils, have fairly high levels of potash, and so it may not be necessary. But if you're concerned about that, I'd do a soil test, and that will tell you for certain if you need to add it. But usually in most situations, if you have a good garden soil, probably not that important.
Okay, Stanley, thanks a lot for your call. You can join our conversation. We've got a few lines open for you right now at 866-780-9100. And this is an email from Carolyn. She says, I have a small greenhouse that's about 30 inches by 50 inches, so tiny. I used it with success this spring, but would like any information to improve usage. What's the ideal temperature to try to maintain?
Ooh, 30 inches by 50, maybe the 30 feet by 50 feet would seem a little bit more realistic.
It would, but
ventilation.
She used the inch sign, so.
Ventilation is probably the key there, is to keep it well ventilated during the warm days, because temperatures under a plastic situation like that, could get plastic or glass, could heat up very quickly and get to 120 degrees or higher under there and fry the plants. So on these cool nights, maybe cover it, but yet at this, keep it covered or put the sides down. But when it gets warm during the daytime hours, make sure it's well ventilated, allow good air movement through it as well.
All right. And Carolyn, if you want to send us an update on its size, you can feel free to do that if I got that wrong. We're going to go to a break here in just a minute, but this is another email about high tunnels. This is from Jennifer. She says, we have a 14-foot by 24-foot high tunnel. By adding two layers of floating row cover and 1 gallon jugs of water under the floating row cover in the winter, we're able to grow a wide variety of greens, lettuces, herbs, carrots, and beets all winter long, more than two people can eat. In March, we start pulling plants out of the tunnel as we plant in our summer garden, and we replant for the winter on September 1st.
Mm-hmm.
We'll continue our conversation in just a moment. With me, Linda Nave of Iowa State University Extension Value Added Agriculture, Richard Duran, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture, and you're welcome to join our conversation. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and with me, Richard Duran, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture, and Linda Nave, Iowa State University Extension Value Added Agriculture. They're here to answer your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. And Larry is on the line next from Marion. Hello, Larry.
Yeah, good morning. The spring of 2008, we planted trees and landscaping in our new home. This summer, I have been watering those trees because of the drought with a very slow, stream for about an hour a week, 45 minutes to an hour a week, and the plants with a soaker hose for about an hour a week. How long do I continue that this fall?
I would continue that through October into early November. I would guess, though, that you might reduce the frequency a bit, maybe cut it back to maybe every 10 days, maybe every 14 days, and I think that should be sufficient.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks for your call, Larry. Next up is Susan on the line in Lake Mills. Hello, Susan.
Hi there. How are you this morning?
Good. What's your question?
I have moles, and I would like to know what to do in my yard to get rid of them.
Well, as far as getting rid of them, trapping is the best way. Now, I didn't say easy, but it is the best way of doing it. You have to be persistent, patient. It may take a month, possibly longer. There are various traps that you can use, but the key there is to keep on moving them around as they create new tunnels and be persistent. And if you're persistent, eventually they'll make a mistake, and they just make one, and that's it.
Mm-hmm. Don't they have to go in their active runs?
Yeah, that's the key problem is that for the most part, the runs that they create, they only use the one time. And so you keep on moving the traps around. Sometimes they do reuse a tunnel, and that's what you're counting on, so that if they do, then they get caught. So the key there is being persistent, patient. The good news is they don't live in big families, and so you probably only have one or two.
All right, Susan, thanks a lot for your call. Rick is on the line next from Tipton. Hello, Rick.
Good morning. First question is it too late to plant winter ryegrass on the fallow part of my garden right now?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know.
You want to plant what kind of grass
winter
again?
Rye. Winter rye?
Yes, he said
yes,
winter rye.
I don't think it would be. Rye grasses tend to germinate very quickly, mm-hmm. So I don't think it would be too late.
Okay, Rick, you still there?
Yes. The second question is I want to transplant my pepper plants from my garden. I plant them in late May, and mm-hmm. they say 90 to 120 days, sometimes 50 to 60 days, and it never ends. Doesn't matter. They always are unripe peppers about now, and I'm always waiting, holding my breath for freeze, And I'm thinking to myself that I should be putting out mature pepper plants. I have a greenhouse available, so I thought I'd put them in the greenhouse over winter. Is that a good idea? And how do I do it?
Not really. Those peppers that are setting on now probably bloomed when we got some cool temperatures in late August, early September. And so
that's
now
right.
They're setting on these baby peppers. That's just the nature of the beast. To dig them and move them indoors, you're running into transplant shock, and they may drop some of their fruits, or they may be deformed or run into blossom end rot on the bottom. Then we're getting into lower light intensity day length. And if you have a greenhouse as well, these stressed plants are going to be magnets for any insect pests that might come along, aphids, white flies. The best thing to do probably would be cover them for the early freezes as best as you can, and
right.
then harvest what comes off later after that as these fruits mature, and then just let them go.
So there's no way to preserve them for the next year? Because they will come back, won't they?
Definitely. Yeah, they will, but you're better off starting with fresh plants. Their productivity decreases. They get tall. I would just start with fresh plants.
All right, Rick, thanks a lot for your call. Next up, Helen in Ames. Hello, Helen.
Hello. Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
Oh, I've got three questions. I've got a Baptista plant and a butterfly bush plant. I want to know, do I cut those down now or do I wait until the spring?
I would wait basically until they're basically dead.
Mm-hmm.
Right now they're still green. As long as they're green, they're still producing food for the plant. And so if you want to do it this year, later this year, probably around mid-November. Or you could wait till next spring. Doesn't really matter that much.
Okay. And the third question is, am I supposed to cover my tomatoes tonight?
Where do you live?
Iowa.
In Ames.
In Ames. Oh, okay. You know what? We're supposed to get a little bit. We're supposed to get cold, but not down to freezing.
Oh,
so
good.
I think here in Ames we're going to be
you
fine.
I cannot believe after the heat went, all my tomatoes came on. I just got scans of tomatoes.
Is your,
all green.
Is your garden in a low area, fairly high, somewhere on a middle of the hill?
Uh-huh.
If it's in a very low pocket area, in other words, there's a hill that drains down, in, you know, kind of flows down into that area, then maybe I would be tempted to go out and cover because that's what we call a cold air drain. And if the cold air is going to settle, that's where it'll be, and it'll settle right on your tomato plants. So depending on the location of your garden, you're kind of in a marginal area.
All right, Helen, thanks a lot for your call, and I hope it's a warmer night than expected for you. Colin is on the line in Pacific Junction. Hello, Colin. Colin, are you there? All right. Seems to have wandered away from the telephone. Norma is on the line in Carroll. Hello, Norma.
Hello. My question is, I bought a dwarf blueberry bush, and it's meant to be in a pot. So I put it in a pot, and I used the potting mix that they recommended, and it really hasn't done anything. It's just sitting there. It had a couple of shoots that kind of shot out a little bit taller than the rest of the plant, but I don't know if it should be getting berries or if it takes longer or what's happening.
Well, with blueberries, typically they don't fruit for 2 or 3 years. That's typical.
Oh.
So, in fact, if you buy a blueberry and it produces flowers the first year, you should pinch those off so all the plant's energy goes into basically root growth and foliage,
mm-hmm.
additional foliage. So it's typical for them not to bear fruit for 2 or 3 years. Now, if you have that plant in a pot, you're going to have to overwinter it. And my suggestion is to find a protected outdoor location, dig a hole in the ground, and set the pot in the ground and place all around the pot as if planting it, but you're not. And then maybe in November, maybe make a cylinder of hardware cloth or chicken wire fencing and place that around the plant and then fill that with some straw or pine needles so that it has some winter protection. And then leave that in place until early April, then remove the materials and you can take the plant out of the ground again.
Okay. Is it bad, like if you put it in a unheated garage or something?
Well, that would be a possibility. The only concern that I have there is in an unheated garage, the temperatures tend to fluctuate quite a bit. So let's say we have a really cold night in January, it's 20 below outside. It may be 0 in that garage or 5 below 0 in that garage, and that's awfully cold. And then if we have some warm days, it might be quite warm in that garage. So you have temperatures that kind of vary quite a bit. That would be a possibility. But I would probably prefer being outside as far as a plant.
Okay. Okay. Thank you very much.
And you might even want to put it next to the house side of the garage so it gets some of that heat from the house.
Mm-hmm.
That adds a little extra insurance.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Norma. And this is a question from Lisa in Bettendorf. She says, my rhubarb is dying off. Is this the right time for that to happen naturally, or has something gone wrong?
Oh, your rhubarb will look like it's senescing this time of year. It's going to start going downhill. Right now, it's building up its food reserves for next year, and I wouldn't worry too much about it.
All right. Let's go back to the phones, and next up is Dennis in Des Moines. Hello, Dennis.
Hey, I've got a question regarding scorched grass. Is it going to revive this coming spring? Secondly, I put some ran out of topsoil to cover some seeds the birds were eating, put on some plant-starting soil to cover the seeds. Is that okay?
Well, I think a lot of areas that are still brown, as far as lawn areas that are still brown, I would suspect those areas have died. When grass goes dormant, it can survive maybe 4, 5, 6 weeks, but it can't survive in a dormant state indefinitely. And I think this year, the prolonged period of hot, dry weather, you had both the drought and the extremely high temperatures, I think certain areas actually did die. And mm-hmm. you can see that because some areas simply have not greened back up. So I suspect those areas that are still brown are probably dead. And since you're calling from, I think, Des Moines, correct?
Yep. Yes.
Then I would try to get some seed in there this weekend, if you can, and then keep that seed bed moist, and then you should have some new grass in those areas by early November.
All right. Thanks a lot. Oh, Dennis has a second question about putting plant-starting soil, starter soil, over seeds on the lawn.
You could do that, but I would just probably just kind of rake the seed into the existing soil.
Okay. Dennis, thanks a lot for your call. This is an email from Gina. She says, I have two questions. First, I have several large grasses that seem to quickly become overgrown over a few years, and I end up having to dig them up, which is quite a task. Wondering when it's easiest to do the digging and if there's a way to keep them from taking over the garden.
Okay. Mm-hmm. If you're referring to ornamental grasses, the best time to move them would be early spring, just as new growth begins to appear. There are some ornamental grasses that are, I think, are well-behaved, that they don't get floppy, they don't get mm-hmm. really huge. For example, feather reed grass is a very common one. It's well-behaved, very columnar. It's not floppy, so you might look into that. So some of the ornamental grasses, you really don't need to do much to at all.
Okay, and the second question is, are coffee grounds a good thing to dump in my garden?
In moderation. They're an organic material, so they can go into your garden or your compost pile. Sprinkle them around. Typically, we're not going to produce that many coffee grounds to make that big a difference. So do they hurt? No. I would probably put them on a compost pile before I put them in the garden soil, but no, they aren't going to hurt. I wouldn't use them as a mulch, though.
Okay. That would be a lot of coffee grounds.
Yes, it would.
All right. Brad is on the line from Pacific Junction. Hello, Brad.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
I'm a truck driver, and I've got a tree in my backyard, a beautiful oak, and there's a low branch that's hanging right up against my chimney and onto the roof.
Mm-hmm.
Would I hurt the tree taking that low branch off?
No,
okay.
You can do that. I would be inclined to wait and do that in November at the earliest. But I would,
okay,
just for concerns about oak wilt. So I would wait and do that in November and make a nice clean cut. Be careful on that so that you don't damage the main part of the tree. If it's a big limb, we typically suggest a 3-cut procedure where you go out about a foot from the main area where you want to cut it off.
Yes,
and
sir.
You make an upward cut about a third of the way through the branch, and
yes,
then you
sir.
go out beyond that a few inches on the branch, make a downward cut all the way through, okay, then it breaks off.
Uh-huh.
And then you make your final cut just where you want it, just beyond that branch collar where the branch is attached to the actual trunk.
Okay. That's wonderful, and I appreciate your help.
No problem. Thanks a lot for calling, Brad, and drive safe out there.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you. Darlene is on the line next from North Central Iowa. Hello, Darlene.
Hi.
What's your question?
I have a beautiful tuberous begonia that's in a pot, and I had it all summer long north of the house. And I was wondering how I winter that over.
Well, I would take it. Is it in the ground or in a pot?
No, it's in a pot.
You can try digging it up, put it in an appropriate size container for what you have, depending on how large it is. Your tuberous begonias are a little bit tricky. You have to take as much of the root mass as possible because you've got this tuberous root underneath. They're a bulb-like structure. So take as much as you can, or you can take your chances and just overwinter that, but most people don't have very good success with that.
What do you do? Cut it off now? It will not continue blooming in the house over winter?
Cut it back. Definitely cut it back. That's a good suggestion. Cut it back. Depending on the size of your plant, take half or two-thirds off of it, and it will branch out.
Okay.
It'll look a little unattractive for quite a while, but it'll come back.
Right.
If you want to try to overwinter the tuber inside, what you can do there is just leave it outside till you do have a killing frost or freeze, and then very carefully dig up that tuber and dry the tuber indoors, maybe in the garage for a week or two, and then get a small box, maybe like a shoe box, and put a layer of vermiculite in the bottom of the box, and then put your tuber on top of that, and then cover with additional material, either vermiculite or wood shavings, whatever, and then put on the lid, punch a couple holes in it, and then place that container in a cool, dry place. The temperature should be around 45 to 50. The reason that you bury the actual tuber is so that the tuber doesn't dry out. If it dries out, it dies, but it needs to be kept dry, so that's why you do that.
All right, thanks a lot for your call, and next up we're going to go to Don in Burlington. Quickly, Don.
Hi there.
Yeah, what's your question?
Yeah, my daughter in Kansas City has some wonderful persimmon trees, and they're volunteering all over the place. Can I take some of those volunteers or maybe some of the seeds up to Burlington and have decent luck with them?
I would try to take some seeds out, yes. And if you can, take those seeds and plant those seeds this fall. Plant them about maybe an inch deep, but plant them this fall because they have to go through a period of moisture and cold temperatures in the soil before they can germinate.
Okay, thanks, Don. And let's squeeze in one more very quick question. This is Linda in Cedar Rapids. Hello, Linda.
Hi. I just heard that if I don't get the grass and the bare spots planted in my yard this year, fleas could develop next spring and summer.
So is that true?
I don't believe that's true. I would say no. I don't think that's likely.
Okay, Linda, we'll set your mind at ease on that one. Richard Geron, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Richard Geron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture. Linda Nave, thank you.
You're welcome.
Linda Nave, Iowa State University Extension Value Added Agriculture. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese and Emily Woodbury. Our executive producer is Jeff Schmidt. Production assistance today from Allison Sullivan. Technical support in Ames from Jason Burns. Our theme music was composed and performed by the River Monks. I'm Charity Nebbe. Monday on the show, we're going to talk about ovarian cancer. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News.